You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice. Well, hello, everybody. My name's John Scott, and I'm setting up this broadcast, this podcast, which you might be listening to on either YouTube or on a podcast, on behalf of the INCJ. So welcome to this, and it's part of a series on the COVID leadership challenge. COVID is presenting a unique challenge to people who are on the front line, but also to leaders. And we at INCJ thought it would be particularly interesting to start a conversation for leaders internationally. And so we're talking to them about their experience of the crisis, because often leaders are alone and they don't get a chance to share what's going on. And if you want to follow this series, you'll find it on our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net and on Twitter at INTCJNetwork. And first up in this series, we've got Willem van den Broeke, who's the Secretary General of CEP. And the most important thing, Willem, is to say hi. Tell us where you're sitting, Willem.
I'm sitting at home, as many, many people do nowadays. Well, I can say just yesterday, things changed in the Netherlands. We're in the Netherlands. I live in Heerhugowaard, which is a city near Alkmaar in the northern Holland, 50 kilometers above Amsterdam, north from Amsterdam. But things changed. We have an increase of numbers of COVID-19 in the Netherlands, as many countries in Europe. So the advice is now to work from home. Mm-hmm. So I am at home.
Well, one of the things we'll do in this series is check out everybody's studies and how tidy they
okay,
are.
Okay, good.
So you're doing so okay so far. And I want you to tell us a little bit about CEP.
Okay.
So how many members do you have and what's the aim of the organization?
Okay, let's start with the aim of the organization. I think you can describe it the best as a network organization. That's the valuable part. The aim of the organization is to promote social inclusion of offenders and then through alternative sanctions, so community sanctions and measures. CEP, it's an abbreviation for the Confederation of European Probation, by the way, is committed to enhance the profile of probation and to improve professionalism on a national but also European scale. You ask how many members we have. A bit of a history, because that's important for me. We started in 1981, so next year, 40 years ago, near Paris in an abbey. At that time, we spoke about Western Europe. So there were 10 Western European countries at that meeting in Paris, talking about the establishment of the Confederation of European Probation, which had a French name, by the way, then. The initiative was taken, I think, by the Dutch, and because those Western European countries were worried about the situation of the conditions of foreign national offenders in Europe, all over Europe. And they thought we could, as 10 Western European countries together, we can solve that problem. Well, you and I know we didn't. But they start organizing workshops, meetings, exchanged reports, things like that. And remember, there was no internet or online meetings like this. It was physical, and reports were sent by post. There was no email. Well, Europe changed over the years. Important to know is 1989, the fall of the Berlin Wall. And let's say from the year 2000, former Eastern and Central European countries became member of CEP. And I think nowadays we have something like 45 full member organizations who provide probation activities. representing 37 countries in Europe. And we have individual members, also universities who are members, branch organizations who are members. And next year, 2021, we hope to be in Paris again, celebrating our 40th anniversary. Important for CEP is that we bring together those members by organizing, still organizing conferences and workshops, and seminars, expert group, summer course, and publishing articles and news on the CEP website and in its newsletter. The office is in Utrecht, in the middle of the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. I'm the Secretary General. We have four staff members, and we have an international board.
Now, in all that long history, you've never had anything like this happen.
No.
So what sort of changes have you had to make to CEP because of COVID-19?
I ended by saying the last question, that we organize all kinds of meetings and conferences. So the first thing we had to do is postpone or cancel all those scheduled events.
Yeah.
First, we were a bit optimistic, but no, we were realistic. We said, okay, it started half March. Till summer, there will be no events. So we canceled some conferences and some small meetings. But then, due course of time, it became clear that it would take longer.
Mm.
And for now, we have canceled all events for the rest of the year. I think the first, let's say, physical event will be in April next year. So that's quite something. So we had to organize, and that was a lot of work, as you can imagine, because that's our daily work. And is it postponing or canceling? What do you have to do? Contacts with venues, contact with speakers. Of course, you had to organize and manage your staff in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
On one side, you could say CEP is very used to working on a distance. I travel a lot. Well, let's say in the old normal.
Yeah.
I make 40 travels a year. So I'm away, let's say, 80 days a year. So I was used by working on distance and managing my staff on distance. And they can do that. They can manage that. But it's something different, of course. You have to work on a different way. And we had to extend, and that was very important, the online communication. I think that's the most important part at the moment. How do you communicate with your members?
Mm.
That is very important. So what we started doing, what we thought was relevant immediately, was collecting all the protocols from national and European bodies regarding how they deal with the COVID-19. And that worked out very well. We collected something like 38 protocols. And what we noticed that several jurisdictions were very keen on that, saying, what do other jurisdictions do? How do they organize things regarding contacts with service users? How do they manage their staff?
Mm.
Contacts with the court, the media, whatever, the MOJ, how do you organize such things? So there was a lot of exchange.
And so they came to you to find out what other countries were doing.
Yeah. And which was quite remarkable. Also the Commission, European Commission, because we are, how do you say that, more lenient, we are more flexible. We can do that much, much quicker than the European Commission can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very much appreciated. And then we start collecting, which I think I find it very nice, was stories of service providers. Actually, our professionals who do the daily activities, who provide the daily activities,
mm-hmm.
how do they manage their meetings with clients?
Okay, give me an illustration. So this is an ordinary probation officers having to be creative.
Well, literally people were working from the kitchen table.
Right.
And
bit like us, you mean, with a coffee?
Yeah, no, that's everywhere the same. And having difficulties with, for instance, high-risk offenders, how do you keep in contact with them? And it's also, well, that's everywhere the same. You hear everywhere the same stories. How difficult it is. If your children are at home too, you have to raise a family too. And so that's difficult. And not all in all jurisdictions, let's say that there was a digital infrastructure. So it is quite a challenge for people. And some of them were very creative on that, how they kept in contact with people. They spoke them somewhere else. I will give an example later, which I think was very innovative. But we collected all those stories. And you mentioned Twitter in the beginning. We noticed that those stories were very popular. Some of them were downloaded more than 4,000 times, which is a lot.
Okay. All over Europe, yeah. And do you think that those illustrations of practice were downloaded by ordinary probation officers so they could find out what their colleagues were doing?
That's
good use of the new technology.
Okay.
So,
There's more, of course, because I said, but what we noticed also is we published a special newsletter on the COVID-19, all the protocols, and we published one on domestic violence, because everywhere you get signals that domestic violence cases are rising because of people had to stay at home, and especially, let's say, the service users, let's say our clients are not the most, how do you say that, easy people to deal with. So we published a newsletter on domestic violence too. And what we could notice, I mentioned that already, that social media was booming. People kept in touch in another way via Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, name it. Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, what we did, John, sorry.
No, it's okay. Keep going.
It's okay. Is that, of course, we start organizing online events instead of the physical meetings. We organized a director general's meeting of 2 hours, just talking about how it is to deal with COVID-19. And that was very much appreciated. And we will give that a follow-up the end of October. And we organized a webinar, and all expert meetings are online now for the rest of the year.
Okay. Well, it sounds to me that CEP has had to be quite fast-moving, and you've put material out, and that's how you've responded. What do you think has been the biggest challenges for you as a leader of CEP?
For me, I think that is to keep the network working.
Okay.
Bringing people together as we used to do, and to maintain all the contacts that we have. That is the most challenging thing.
Do you think people have missed meeting face-to-face?
Oh, yes. You get all kinds of messages now. Okay, it was nice to see you. For instance, when you organize an expert meeting, you get a thanks mail afterwards, and people were saying something like, it was very nice to see you again. I hope the next meeting will be physical again. And I noticed it myself. Recently, I was in Brussels and I was in Strasbourg. And then I noticed how much I missed the context when you actually meet the people there.
Yeah. Do you think the work's as good on virtual meetings? Do you think the quality of the work is as good?
It depends. There are things which you say, okay, this is really, we have to remember, or how do you say that? When you have, for instance, when you have a presidium meeting, you do that one day meeting, but that's a meeting which you can easily do online with 5 people for 2 or 3 hours. It saves a lot of time. And then the next time you can say, okay, we can organize another meeting with a dinner or whatever, with a bit more social contact than, let's say, the business contacts that you have.
Okay. One of the things I'm interested to ask you about is that you and I know each other for a long time, and this feels very easy to chat like this, but it's making new contacts, which might be a bit harder virtually, and maybe reaching out. Have you found over the last 6 months that getting new relationships going has been harder, or are people learning how to do that as well virtually?
They're learning. Most people are learning fast how to do that. What I do now, for instance, in the past, if you look for a presenter for a conference, you send him or her an email. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you say, we'll meet, blah, blah, blah. Now you organize a meeting like this. Yeah. Say, okay, it's good to chat. Also with old contacts. That's new. Yeah. That you say, okay, we have to meet in another way to get in contact. But what is good to know that I think we, over the last few months, I think we have 4 or 5 new members.
Okay.
So
maybe people are reaching out and learning how to make new relationships virtually as well.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good. Right. I want to change the focus a little bit and look at some of the negatives of COVID-19, because you've been quite upbeat. But my guess is that probation services around Europe, your members, are many of them are under real pressure.
Yeah. Could
be financial. We've talked about the real worries they might have in supervising dangerous offenders or offenders who maybe are victims themselves of either violence or are struggling with mental health or other issues. And I wonder what worries your probation members have brought to you about the impact of COVID-19, mm-hmm. Maybe on their budgets or what. So what worries are out there in the system about?
Well, of course, it's on different levels. I think the main concern is how to organize the contact, the meetings with the service user.
Got it, yeah.
That is their main concern. How do you organize that? And then especially with high-risk offenders.
Yeah.
You can imagine that. And then it's also how to manage an organization when the offices are actually closed.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? And then... what they had to organize is if work properly with or even implement a digital infrastructure. What I noticed that in some jurisdiction, there is no was no digital infrastructure or it was not used. In countries where it was used, for instance, like in the Netherlands, everybody could log in from home on the system.
Mm.
So everybody could work from home, had done it before. So within a week, everything was arranged. But that was not the case in every other jurisdiction, especially small jurisdiction. Mm. When you're, let's say, everybody lives 30 kilometers from the office, why should you have a digital infrastructure if you could go to the office every day? And that is was one of the worries. Then another worry was the pressure on the caseload. I shall explain that.
Mm-hmm.
As you noticed, I think it has been in the UK the case too, that there were many pre-releases from prison. I've heard it from many jurisdictions. People were sent home with or without electronic monitoring and probation supervision.
Yeah.
But without extending the probation staff, of course. The positive thing about that is that there was no raise of criminal offenses in many jurisdictions. So now they're more or less saying, okay, perhaps we can do without so many prisons. We can do with less prisons. Who knows? But pressure on the caseload, that's one. And then the what we hear a bit later was the backlog of daily probation work, which is now the case. And then think of all those community services. Who are not executed. Only in the Netherlands, 10,000 are waiting.
So this is cases not allocated and hours of offenders have to work in the community.
Yeah. And of course,
the hours are built
I think that's the case in the UK too, in England and Wales too.
Yeah.
Lots of people on the community centres were working in an elderly home or something like that.
Okay,
not done at the moment, of course. Mm. So how do you manage that? The same for pre-sentence reports. Lots of jurisdictions, probation writes draft pre-sentence reports, but the courts were closed too. So there was...
So that's a problem for justice, isn't it? And that's presumably a problem right across all your membership. Yeah. That there's this mountain...
I think our next Director General's meeting will be about this topic. Okay. How do you start up an organization again? How do you deal with the MOJ about this? And also the judiciary on those backlogs.
Yeah. And can I just pause you a moment there, Willem? Because the backlog exists now, and we're talking at the end of September. And as we understand it, across your membership, across the whole of Europe, cases are rising again. New measures have been taken, new regulations, pretty well all countries are tightening up again. So that backlog is likely to get worse and worse over winter, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is a problem that's only going to get bigger for the justice system.
Yeah.
So that, if we go back to what worries a probation manager's having to face, leaders are having to face, it's that worry about backlogs, and that presumably creates real pressures on their staff.
Okay. Of course, it's not the problem of the staff itself, because they deal with individual cases. Mm. But what they see, the signals I get, is an increasing number of cases with mental health problems or domestic violence cases. That's, let's say, more on the content of the cases. Okay. What is going on? Have things changed when you have to deal with your service user? Yes. Okay. That is what professionals tell me. Yeah.
Right. And I'm thinking maybe that the long-term pressures that might come out of increased unemployment and those mental health issues will make real demands on probation services across Europe.
Yeah, I think so.
And, okay.
Yeah, but then on the long term is, of course, it's what everybody say is how you're saying that is how to keep society safe.
Yeah.
In general, it's the contact with the media. I think that's very important too. And you mentioned the budget. We don't know what will happen, of course, in general.
Mm.
With the budget of all probation organizations. If you compare it, of course, to prison, it's relatively cheap.
Mm.
But still, you don't know. You don't know what will happen.
Well, I'm really interested because obviously people think about health being in the front line and social provision. Justice provisions are in the front line, and as the COVID crisis continues, it feels like a grinding sort of crisis, and I think leaders are caught up in that. Shall we just, before we move on to other topics, I just want to ask, you mentioned earlier that you've got illustrations of innovative ways. I'm really keen to perhaps move into ways in which you've heard about creative ways that probation staff have responded to this crisis, but perhaps to raise our
scores. In general, of course, that's the use of video platforms.
Yeah.
But also in court sessions.
Okay. Tell me about that.
It's quite new. There were, of course, experiments on that, but you see that it becomes more, I cannot say casual, but you can say, okay, people start thinking, okay, perhaps this is the way to organize things.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a story on the website on this. What I noticed was also there are some apps which you can download on your phone, supportive apps for offenders. I think the most famous one is Changing Lives from the Probation Board of Northern Ireland, PB&I. And what they noticed was an increase of people who downloaded the app and wanted contact with their probation officer. So it's not control, it's on a voluntary base. People need the structure of an app. It's a calendar and it's do's and don'ts and news. And but I like that very much. I find that very positive. Yeah. And then the last one is perhaps the nicest one. It's the creativity of individuals.
Okay.
The best read story of a professional of the last 6 months was a story of a Dutchman called Frans.
Uh-huh.
And he organized walking for offenders. He was a walking coach. So instead of organizing meetings, he walked with the offenders, with the service user, alongside the beach or through the polder, because we're in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And he had a waiting list.
Fantastic.
Yes, and I like that very much.
Yeah, I do too.
If you can't meet at the office, meet people outside.
Well, and also, it's a bit like we're trying to have a proper conversation. You can have really good chats with people while you're walking alongside, as long as you're socially distancing.
Yeah.
Walking therapy sounds great to me. Walking supervision, it's a great idea. I'm going to move focus a little bit away from the organization.
Okay.
And maybe I want to talk about you a bit.
Okay.
We're talking about leaders, and you're a leader, and you've been in leadership management for a long time. Has anything about the last 6 months made you rethink your approach to work?
Yeah, but that's, I think, just not in general to my work. I still think it's very important, and I like it very much. But it, in general, it's, of course, the relativity of things we do also. And the vulnerability of our society. I think that is what you see. And how to keep your staff motivated and together. You have to organize that in another way. That is made me think of, okay, how do you do that? You have to invest in that. It's such a different way of working. I remember how glad we were that we could meet. I think it was beginning of June, just informal. We had an informal meeting in the garden of one of our staff members. I was there in the neighborhood, so the others came, and how glad we were that we could meet physically, although we were in contact like this. That was good that we could see and each other, and everybody was in good health. Such things have become very important.
Do you think CEP will go back to the way it was? Do you think you'll
in a way? I hope that we'll get back to how it was once was. Because as I said earlier, more and more we receive signals from members how they miss CEP and the contacts with the other members. But some things will stay. I think more online meetings as we have now.
Yeah.
I think we will do that in the future too. We did it in the past, by the way.
Yeah.
But for instance, it's easier. I can give you an example. We organize a mental health expert meeting online, and I already have a topic for a second one. I said, okay, why not offer the group to do that online? It's a small investment. People don't have to travel.
Well, it's also greener, isn't it? If fewer people are jumping on airplanes. But it is interesting. It's the magic of being together. Can really raise commitment, but also you could say waste a lot of time. So it's that getting the balance.
On the other hand, what we noticed, as you know, every 2 years we organize a conference on the use of electronic monitoring. We had to postpone it for a year.
Yeah.
And still, we have a growing number of registrations. People like to come and to meet. Yeah.
So the commitment hasn't gone down to the organization. Actually, people are finding out what they're missing about you.
Yeah.
I think, has lockdown changed you as a person at all?
I can't say no, but I don't think so. Yes, but of course, I think that's for you too. It makes you think how vulnerable society is and things are, and of course family values, how important that is, and health of friends and relatives, how important you think that is. Contacts with your grandchildren,
Yeah. And you can't hug them. It seems really weird, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's very difficult. Yeah.
Have you got a book to recommend? What's the best book you've read?
The best book. Yeah, that's a story. In March, I started with a book of one of my favorite authors. Mm-hmm. He's called Ferdinand Bernard Hotz, but it was called Troubled Times.
Right, good title.
Immediately, I stopped reading. So it made me think, what is the has been the most important book or influential book in my life? And I found one.
Yeah.
Easy. It's called The Office.
Okay.
It's 7 books. It's 5,000 pages.
5,000
pages. And it's a series of novels about a Dutch author called Voskuil, which means foxhole. And he describes very in detail the day-to-day affairs of an office based in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. And the office is called the Meertens Institute. It has now a different name, I think. It's a research institute that focuses on the study of documentation of Dutch language and culture.
Yeah.
And central in that book are phenomena that shape everyday life in our society. Mm-hmm. He describes it as scientific research into trivialities, like, for instance, how sorts of bread were spread all over the Netherlands.
Now, is this translated into English or other languages?
I think so. Yes.
Well,
yes.
This is your recommendation.
You will recognize it. All those stories. One of the storylines is it's also a radio play, by the way.
Okay.
And last but not least, I visited that office.
Okay.
But I promise you, I should tell you a story about coffee.
Okay, go on.
One storyline is about coffee, which, as we know, we have a national brand here, Douwe Egberts. It's great coffee. But it's also the time he describes 30 years of working at that office when fair trade coffee became popular. And the head person, the author, he wants to introduce fair trade coffee, which is a different brand.
Of course.
But the concierge, he refused to buy that. And they suspect him that he collects the royalty points of the coffee. Okay. Yeah, you get royalty.
Oh, I see. Points.
And it's brought to the management team. The coffee is brought as a topic to discuss in the management team. And they thought it was so important, they brought it to the board. So a board decision was taken.
Only in Holland.
Yes, that they should use fair trade coffee. But still the concierge refuses to buy the fair trade coffee. And the main character, in the end, he buys the coffee himself.
That's a commitment to.
These are all stories. What happened
to real values, in spite of the culture.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's one of my favorite books. It's
5,000 pages. It would keep you quiet for the rest of lockdown, I should think.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one of the things about a challenge is that we're going to be passing this challenge to other people. Have you any questions from this COVID experience that you're still working at, that's sort of like an open question that you want to put to me or to other people?
What I think is important is my open question is, we have to tell our story to the media and to our stakeholders, to everybody. It's about creating public value. How do you create public value as an organization? I think that is my main question. How do you do that as an organization? Because it's so important.
That is a really good question, because I think we find that as a probation service or as a criminal justice system, we find that hard in ordinary times. And at the moment, the attention is, let's say, on health risk, or at the moment, students going back to college are a big issue. I think all over Europe, people are worried about students going away and having a very bad experience of going back to university, rather than that being an exciting time. It's a time when they're worried about their health and, you know, not being able to mix and having a great time making new friends. So getting stories about criminal justice and what our staff are doing. So that your challenge is telling stories and how to create public value.
Yeah, and that should be my advice to all prevention organizations. Tell your story. Tell your story to the media. Tell your story to others. Because I always say, if you ask a five-year-old child, one of your grandchildren, what is a prison? Well, that's easy. It's a big building with towers and with bars, and you can't get out in cells. But if you ask them, what is probation? That is so difficult to tell. So we have to keep on telling our stories. What our contribution is to safer society, how we organize that.
Tell your story.
Tell your story.
What, that is a really brilliant advice. And I think that that's exactly where we'll sign off, Willem.
Okay.
So thanks so much for this conversation. I finished my coffee. I think you've finished yours. Yes. I suspect yours was better than mine because yours was Dutch. And I'd like to say to everybody, thanks for listening or for watching. Please stay safe out there. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, come and listen to the next one. We're going to be visiting leaders across the criminal justice system, police, prisons, people working with victims in restorative justice and across different countries like today. And thanks for being there. I'm going to say goodbye from Willem and from me, John Scott. Thanks for being there. Bye-bye. You have been listening to the INCJ podcast, Conversations about International Criminal Justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.